It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer of the Denver Broncos. It's football at four. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
The battle for the Broncos continues and took another significant twist this morning as Amy Klemmer and Beth Bolin Wallace, with their names on the lawsuit, filed a petition in Arapahoe County challenging the validity of the Pat Bolin Trust on the grounds that their father lacked capacity and was under undue influence when he signed his estate planning documents in 2009. I'm reading from Nikki Javala's article that came out this morning. According to the lawyer for Amy Klemmer and Beth Bolin Wallace, there is substantial and overwhelming evidence that Mr. Bolin lacked the required capacity in 2009. As a result, Ms. Klemmer and Ms. Wallace have filed a petition asking the court to decide the issue and related issue of whether the 2009 trust, which is the document under which the trustees have derived their power and authority, is valid, and whether Mr. Bolin was subjected to undue influence. There has been a response from the trust attorney, Dan Riley. It is sad. It is sad and unfortunate that Beth Bolin Wallace and Amy Bolin Klemmer have elected to contest their father's plan and attack his personal health. The complaint represents the latest efforts in their public campaign to circumvent Pat Bolin's wishes. The evidence in the courtroom will show Pat Bolin was fully capable of establishing and understand his trust and estate plan when it was created in 2009. Mrs. Wallace and Klemmer's current position about their father's supposed mental incapacity in 2009 was not raised by them or their lawyers until after 2014, when Ms. Wallace was privately told by the trustee she's not capable or qualified to serve as the controlling owner.
That sounds like a paper your brother wrote.
Dan Riley is married to Mary Kelly, who is one of the people on the trust, as is Rich Slivka and Joe Ellis. The reason why this is interesting is because Klemmer and Beth Bolin Wallace put themselves at risk of being disinherited because they're not supposed to do this.
Yeah. If any of the beneficiaries challenge the will, then they would be excluded from inheritance.
But
so they're kind of putting their necks out there.
Yes. It's by far the most aggressive move and probably the last move that could possibly be made. This very well may stop the NFL from continuing their arbitration case completely and leave the decision in the hands of the Arapahoe County Court.
What happens if they win? The trust is dissolved. Who's running the team now?
It would go back to the trust that was developed in the late 90s, the original trust. The story there is that Pat Bolin was in a ski accident in the late 90s and did not have any sort of provisions on how the team should advance if something were to happen to him. Didn't exist at the time. And he put it together, and it's been changed over the years. But that's when it was originally formed, back in the late 90s. It didn't exist for quite a while.
Do we know what that one says?
We do not.
I bet the two older daughters know.
I'm not sure.
Well, they must have an idea.
Maybe not.
Why would they be fighting so hard for it?
Because I think they believe the people who are on the trust now were not on the trust then.
Well, Slivka was still an employee of the Broncos then.
He was.
Joe Ellis was an employee of the Broncos then.
True.
He was Mr. Bolin's right-hand man back then.
True. I don't have all the answers like that, but that's what they're trying to do. That's what the goal is. Adam Schefter pointed out, let me ask you your opinion on this.
They're guessing on the 2006 diagnosis 3 years later that it had come to the point, and they're grown at this point, so they're not around their dad that much. So they wouldn't be able to tell, or maybe they could, where he was in 2009 compared to 2006. They did hire McDaniels at that time.
There were a bunch of quirky things going on. The hiring of McDaniels, the firing of Mike Shanahan.
After the extension.
Oh.
We met with him. I met with Mr. Bowen, a group of players in 2007. We met at John Lynch's house in his basement and talked about the season and what was going on, what he could do. I've told you this before.
What were your impressions?
He seemed 100% healthy. And this is after the diagnosis.
Well, this is the crux of the case. And now I've heard people say, well, Dan Riley's thing, it's sad and unfortunate they have elected to contest their father's plan and attack his personal health.
They're not attacking his, they're questioning it.
Correct. The other side of that coin is we think my dad our father was taken advantage of because he wasn't in the right frame of mind, and what he really wanted goes back to what the trust said originally. So you can you understand, listen, if Mr. Bowen was of sound mind, and
yeah, but you can also the third side is that maybe the two older daughters fell out of favor.
There's that side as well.
And Annabelle wanted one of her children to take over the team.
Perhaps, but Annabelle's not involved with any of it. Annabelle's not part of the trust, nor was she.
No, but she could have been, you know, advising Mr. Bowen about who they think out of the seven kids, and she would be, you know, partial to her own kids.
It would make sense.
And said, you know, you need to change this. You know, Beth, you don't want Beth running the team.
Which would make sense, too, because there's two families. Beth and Amy, like, are from Sally Parker.
Like most good husbands, you do whatever the hell your wife tells you to do.
Yeah, but Mr. Bowen never specifically outlined a specific kid, though.
No, but he has criteria.
Right, and that's kind of the crux of it, too, like who is really fulfilling that criteria,
right,
the best.
But if you name certain people as the trust, you'll know which way they're going to go. There's probably not much relationship, especially after how the Broncos came out all hot after Beth Bowen, you know, said that she wanted to become the controlling owner of the team, made it known. They came out right after in the paper saying that she is unfit and unqualified at this point.
Not capable or qualified, as he wrote again in this statement. Taking, you know, reinforcing their opinion that she's not capable or qualified. Adam Schefter tweeted out, on the eve of the wedding of Broncos ownership favorite Brittany Bowlen, her two stepsisters filed lawsuit against the Pat Bowlen Trust. That's an interesting way to put the story, isn't it? What's the wedding got to do with anything?
Should be the best day of her life. And this is handed down the day before.
So why is Adam pointing that out?
That the wedding's tomorrow?
Yeah. Why didn't Adam just tweet Amy Clemmer and Beth Bowlen, the daughters of Pat Bowlen?
It's a tidbit. It's an interesting tidbit.
Why do you think he put that in?
Because I think it was...
It is an interesting tidbit.
I agree. This morning.
Yeah.
Intentionally. The day before the wedding.
Seems like a shot to me to put that in, as if, you know.
No, he's just putting out information. He's probably connecting dots like you and I are trying to do, right? Hey. Wait, who's he taking a shot at?
Oh, I think that's clearly a shot at Amy and Beth right there. It makes them sound like bad people. You think they're doing it on this date on purpose?
The timing? They could have done it Monday.
So you think this is on purpose to disrupt the wedding?
Yes. I'm guessing.
I'm guessing that's why Adam's pointing this out, too.
How do you, you don't see that at all?
No, I can see it. I can see it. I don't know why, but I can see it. The timing is interesting, to say the least.
And Amy, she's the one that lives in Hawaii, right?
That's right.
So she'll be, assuming she'll be at the wedding tomorrow.
The wedding's in Colorado.
Oh, I thought it was in Hawaii.
It's in Colorado. I confirmed that today, because I was looking for my Evite. No, I confirmed it today. It's in Colorado.
Beth lives in Colorado. Will she be there?
She will be there.
Wow.
What a story. Okay, we'll have Nikki on after 5 o'clock to clarify some issues, but then sort of wrap it up in a bow. On to the Bears and the Broncos and Vic Fangio and what they have to look forward to. Plus, we're going to play Match Game. We'll have our prop bets playing to come on a Football Friday right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer of the Denver Broncos. Here's the drive.
Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers became legends here. But if there's one Bear who best represents the city of broad shoulders, it's the coach, Iron Mike Ditka.
Now, be honest. If the Bears had given Rex Grossman the day off in that Super Bowl and had Ditka play quarterback, how badly would the Colts have lost?
Well, Coach Ditka, you got to remember, was in his late 60s at the time. So I see that as a close one. Bears 96, My Little Pony's 10.
That seems wrong to me.
Horses are no match for the Bears.
Bears.
We are joined by Coach Mike Ditka. Coach, thank you so much for being on with us. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
When you hear that skit that was very famous on Saturday Night Live and was brought up again by Peyton Manning recently on ESPN, what do you think of it, and does it make you smile a little bit?
Well, the guys had a lot of fun. There's no question about it. And they got a lot of mileage out of that. Those guys were good guys. I got to know them, and they were fun guys. You know, Chicago gets kind of boisterous, and they kind of made that special.
How involved are you with the Bears organization these days?
I'm really not. I'm a big fan, of course. I'll always be a Bears fan. I mean, I was drafted and signed by George Halas twice, once to be a player, once to be a coach. And I love the Bears. I love everything about it. But, I'm way beyond that now. I'm an old man, and they got a good organization. They got a good coach. They got a hell of a young quarterback. So, I mean, a lot of things that they're doing right now are pretty good now. They've got to learn to score points, that's for sure. You can't win in the NFL if you can't score points. You know, if you think you're going to score 10 points and win a lot of games, you're crazy.
Well, that seems to be an issue in the NFL as we look at this Broncos and Bears game, Coach, that both teams seem to be having a problem scoring points. What would you do to adjust that?
Well, I don't know. I'm not knocking it. I mean, I understand defense, and you prime your team to play great defense, but I think the consistency is no longer there. And so when everybody says, well, we're going to try to score a lot of points, you come out and you throw the ball, well, that's not necessarily the right thing to do. But you're going to have to throw it. There's no question about it. But if you're going to establish a good running game in the NFL, your play-action passes will get you all you want. So, I think you got to run the ball, and then you got to go play-action. And you got to get in a passing situation. You just pass the ball, that's all. And it'll be a good way to do that.
Do you like the Bears' style of offense? They're in shotgun 99% of the time. They run a lot of RPO. It's almost a college style of offense. Do you like that style?
Well, I don't particularly. I don't dislike it because I was in Dallas when we put the shotgun in. The Cowboys were the first ones to put it in, really, and with Coach Landry. And it's a great offense. And when you had a quarterback like Stroudback, it worked great for him. The guy's got to be mobile. He's got to be able to run the ball. But, why we put it in, I think the quarterback has a much better view of the defense. You know, he doesn't have to take the snap from under center and drop back. He's already back there, so he can pre-read the defense. And then when the ball snapped, you can tell pretty much about what defense they're playing. And, wrap the quarterback and try to get the ball to the guy they're supposed to get it to.
Coach Ditka, you were a tight end before your time because you were a great pass catcher as well as a blocker. What did you like doing better? What did you take more pride in?
Well, I played, I had great running backs playing behind me. You guys won't remember Willie Gallimore, but he was fantastic. And, of course, Gale Sayers. And, they were two of the best all time, in my opinion, in the NFL. And George Halas, he's no dummy. We ran the ball. We ran the ball. We used play action passing. So, I was a tight end, and I caught a lot of passes because I had a quarterback named Bill Wade, God bless him, that he loved to throw the football to me. And, that's, it's a little easier. People wanted to play that, too deep defense, and you know, bump up, come up and bump the outside receiver. So, you know, I was sometimes covered by a linebacker, and if I can't get away from a linebacker, I shouldn't be playing.
Coach Dick, I've always had a question that I hope you can just indulge me on this a tad. Do you have any regrets that you didn't get Walter Payton a touchdown in Super Bowl, in that Super Bowl? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, every day of my life.
Oh.
I didn't think about it. You know, I really didn't think about it. And the play that we ran with the fridge is a play we ran all year. I mean, it wasn't like I just ran the play. I mean, it was a play we ran all year. And when he was moving, it was pretty hard to stop. But I never thought about it. And, of course, if I had it to do over again, I would have thought about it and done it the right way, make sure Walter got his touchdown. Walter Payton was the greatest football player I've ever seen. Now, that's me, that I've ever seen. I mean, there were a lot of good ones. But people don't realize what a great receiver he was, what a great blocker he was. I mean, he blocked for Matsui like Matsui blocked for him. So, I mean, he was pretty special.
All right, Coach. Do you have a pick, Broncos or the Bears? Should I ask you who you're picking this
week? Well, the Bears, you know what they are. They've got a good defense, guys, and they can run the football. I like Mitch, but they got to score points. You cannot score 10 points in the NFL and think you're going to win every game. You're just not going to do it. You're going to lose most of them. So they got to score points, and I don't know that much about the Broncos' offense right now, but that's the key. You've got to take pressure off your defense by putting some points on the board. If you're sitting there looking at the game and you only got 3 points or 7 points going into the third quarter, you're going to have a problem. I don't care how good your defense is.
Is it a problem for the Bears' offense when Vic Fangio was basically the defensive coordinator and knows them pretty well throughout all those training camps he was there?
It was a great coach. There's no question about it. But I don't think it's that. I mean, the plays are the same plays they ran with Vic. They're running them now. And Nagy is a great coach. I mean, you got to execute. And to me, I believe everything can drop the running game. A lot of people don't believe that now. But that's what I believe. I mean, it can drop the running game because you should play action passing. You should get your tight end involved. People do what they want to do. But the Bears are, believe me, they're formidable. They are. Mm. They just got to figure out how to score points.
Coach, when a young person comes up and screams Ditka at you, are you okay with it or would you like to punch him in the face?
Oh, no, I'm okay with it. They could yell anything. They could call me any name they want to. I have no ego about it anymore. That was a long time ago, and I was blessed to be able to play the way I did. I ended up playing for George Halas, and then they traded me away to Philadelphia, which was my 2 years in hell. Then I went to heaven in Dallas and under Coach Landry. And then when I was done playing, he hired me to coach the tight ends and special teams. And then the best thing that ever happened to me, it was so I had Coach Halas and Coach Landry in my life, and they both impacted my life really more than anybody else except my father.
Well, I guess I should ask you, how often do people just come up and yell Ditka at you? Does it happen all the time?
Well, no, I have some restaurants, and when I'm in there, people are pretty nice about it, really.
Okay.
And, I'm sure that a lot of it, you got to understand, everybody's not going to like you. And I probably have my share who don't like me, but that's life. I can't change it. It is what it is.
Well, man, Coach, thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate it. And great catching up. Thank you, Coach Ditka.
All right, let's have a good game. God
okay.
Bless.
All right. It happened. Richie, how do you feel? You got
redemption.
You got to feel all
high
right.
High five, huh? Richie.
It is pretty redeeming considering we've been playing phone tag. Thank you for a week now. It was pretty good.
And for 20, he was supposed to be on 24 hours ago.
Yeah, and it was always just like just missed it or like just too late, but we got it.
I thought that was great.
Halas and Landry were his coaches.
He spans so much of NFL history; it's crazy. By the way, we have to get to Richie. We've avoided it so far, but we'll get there with what's going on with Richie today. We got to take another picture. This guy's wardrobe, I'm telling you. Also, we have Match Game, which should be fun. There you go. Nice job. It's a Football Friday right here on the Fan.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer of the Denver Broncos. Here's the drive.
All right, a little Match Game here. Richie, go ahead.
All right, let's kick things off with the Chicago Bear that poses the biggest threat offensively to the Broncos is...
I'm in. I'm boring on this, Tommy.
I'm in. Well, I'm in. I have...
Ding. Do we have a ding?
Ding. Ding.
I'll get you a ding.
Give me a ding.
I said Tariq Cohen.
I said Mitch Trubisky.
That's fair.
I know. It's boring, though.
Allen Robinson.
Not bad.
He's a physical receiver.
Got to get the ball somehow.
What? All right, you took the generic quarterback?
I mean, Cohen at least. Right. I mean, that's a bad question for me because I'm going to take a quarterback for every team.
And you're going to take Trubisky especially. He's one of your guys.
He is one of my guys.
You've latched on to. You have 31 teams you pull for.
You can't have the Glennon Trubisky doctrine without.
You just don't like the Broncos.
I like the Broncos.
You don't,
what do you
because
mean?
You disagree with how they've handled about? The quarterback position and how they've drafted the quarterback.
They've screwed up significantly. Next question.
The biggest question mark heading into Sunday's game for the Broncos is blank.
Ding.
Wow, that was quick. I'm not ready yet. Okay.
I said red zone offense. I still don't know.
That's good. That's
I still don't know if
good.
They're going to.
But they were basically 2 for 4.
Well, that's basically
50%. Basically, that's good. Basically.
Is 50% not good?
That's an F.
I said Bulls.
Well, it might was Bulls and how they account for Khalil Mack and help out Bullsy.
So we're both. Yeah. We matched.
That's good. At least somebody matched.
Yeah, I guess it's, who matches with who is really the game, isn't it? All right, next question.
The Broncos unit that will look most improved from week 1 to week 2 is?
Okay. I'm going to be specific, too.
Well, I have a position group. Is that not specific enough? Or could be anything.
All right. I think we're on the same tip here. I'm in. Are you in?
Yes.
Well, if we're going to go position group, then I would probably say DBs.
Yeah, secondary. That's what I had.
I said pass rush because
milk
I think.
Milk carton kids.
The milk carton kids are not going to be milk carton kids this week.
I would hope not.
I took them off the milk carton.
They're still on the milk carton.
Derek Wolfe is on the milk carton.
Oh, dear. Oh, I did not put him down. I think we'll just look better. Listen, I know what you said, like Bradley Chubb and Von Miller actually did not have that bad of games.
They didn't have a lot of opportunities. And correct. When they did, Bradley Chubb smoked Miller one time on an inside move. It's just that Carr got rid of it. And then on the touchdown pass, he was held by Colton Miller. Von didn't have a lot of opportunities to get a real pass rush.
I just think they'll get there. They'll make more of an impact.
Not if the ball's out after, after his drop, Trubisky. I mean, if he gets the ball out, what does a pass rush do?
I just don't.
If guys are open, that's why I want the secondary. And this could be, if the secondary is the most improved group, that should make the pass rush improved as well, because that means Trubisky has to hold on to the ball.
All right, next question.
The Denver Bronco with the best individual performance against the Bears will be...
Okay.
No, wait.
All right. Are you being a wise guy?
I'm going to...
Wise guy it up? All right, go ahead, Richie. Who you got?
I said Bradley Chubb. I think he's not going to be a milk carton kid anymore. I think that that they'll probably overemphasize Vaughn, and I think he'll have a good game.
I said Philip Lindsay.
I'd be cool with that.
I think he'll...
Come on, man.
What'd you say?
Elijah Wilkinson. Making his first start at right tackle.
Nice.
It's going to take me a couple days to really get into that.
All right, so...
It's going to take a couple days.
Hey, let me tell you.
You guys have stats. You guys went with stats.
If you go Khalil Mack doesn't impact the game and Elijah's shutting him down, I'm all with you. Well, who wouldn't sign up for that? I mean, we saw what happened to Michael Schofield with Khalil Mack not so long ago.
5 sacks?
Yeah, hey, man, Elijah.
But Khalil Mack moves around now. He's not just not going to be on Elijah Wilkinson. It's going to be Bolsey as well.
Well, that's terrifying.
Which is why it was our number one concern.
We'll address it.
Our first concern is Bolsey.
Last one. Yes, that's true.
The Bronco most likely to turn things around after a poor week one performance.
After a poor week one.
Ding!
I'll say Von Miller. Who's the most likely?
Most likely.
Von Miller, because he's the most talented guy, and he had kind of a, you know, he didn't have a bad game, but he didn't have a great game. So I would say Von.
Isaac got him.
That's who I said.
Oh,
because
my God.
He has the most.
So.
He has the most room to improve.
Yeah, but why is he likely? There's a word likely in here. Why is he likely?
Because I think that Vic will put him in better positions. If he has 8 tackles again, that's not good.
There you go. Match game.
At least he didn't miss any tackles.
In terms of previewing the game itself, our prop bets are the best way to do it. That's next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer of the Denver Broncos. Here's the drive.
How is the game going to break down? What is it going to look like? Well, it's time to look at it.
Let's start with the quarterback.
Through our prop bets. Yes. Joe Flacco.
Over under passing yards, 250.
That's the same number as last week, right?
He was pretty close to it.
Got a feeling that's
268. He was in the over.
He did.
Where the hell's my pen?
Death by inches.
Got it. I don't know whose pen this is. It's not actually mine.
Yeah.
Stole it.
Yeah.
Are we saying the answer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you have to record them.
I'm waiting for you. It doesn't have ESP.
You can't go first?
I could. Under.
Stop obfuscating.
Oh, fancy. You want to go there?
It's going to be all confusing.
You want to go there? We can go big word battle if you want.
Try to confuse me.
They're conflagrating, keep it going.
Did you give an answer?
I said under.
Take the over.
And use the word conflagating.
Take an over.
Over. All right.
All right. Well, if he's
right now, my answers too?
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Whether he is or isn't passing for 250 yards, how many touchdowns does he get? Over, under, 1.5.
Over.
It's going to be a productive day.
I'm going to say over as well. He should have had 2 yesterday, or last game. So over. But under 250 yards.
Wow, that's going to be real productive for you. Under 250 yards, a couple touchdowns.
Wait, hold on
least.
A second. Wait a second. No, wait. I got to figure out what my prediction is.
Nope, that was in the ink.
Under.
All of a sudden,
under.
The math is coming into play for
under.
Later.
Under. Sorry. It's got to do with my final prediction.
Oh, shoot. Wait, I can't go over?
You guys aren't factoring the math into this already.
I already know what the score is. I can't go over. I have to go under.
He's going to throw 3 touchdowns in a 16-10
game. I got to go under.
Right.
All right.
Under or both under.
Well, this one shouldn't affect your score prediction too much. Interceptions over under 0.5.
Over. He'll throw one.
Man, they're takeaways. That's what they do. I'll take the over.
Okay.
Please don't boo him. Would you take the over?
It's just one interception. Yeah, I took the over. It's all right. Throw a pick. No big deal.
All right. Moving on to receivers.
Well,
Emmanuel Sanders.
5 picks.
Oh, that would be a huge deal.
Over's over. Oh, it could be way over.
There's
Remember
a way
that?
Over.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about the Bills being -4 in giveaway takeaway? 4 turnovers in the first half against the Jets, and they still won that game.
Yeah. That's good coaching on the Jets' behalf.
Unreal.
Who's their coach?
Adam Gase.
I forgot that.
My best friend. Go ahead. What's next?
Moving on to receivers. For Emmanuel Sanders, receiving yards over under 75.
Well, apparently he was falling down left and right. I mean, you know, now.
A couple slips.
Couple.
Over.
I'll say over as well.
He played on a baseball field.
If he didn't fall down so much, he probably would have had.
I think he tripped over second base.
Yeah. Over.
Second base is right in the middle of that field.
Do those yards translate into touchdowns? Over under 0.5 for Emmanuel.
They do not. Not for me. Under.
I think over. He likes the theatrics.
Okay.
He's my one guy.
Cortland Sutton coming off a pretty big week.
No touchdowns.
Over under receiving yards for Cortland, 90.
Under.
I'll take the under.
And we'll just get right to the touchdowns.
No. Under.
Under.
It has to be for my math.
Yeah. So no touchdowns for Cortland.
What about Noah Fant? Other than the disastrous first play, he had a couple of nice catches. Over under receiving yards for Noah Fant.
Over
35.
I'll say over as well. But we'll both.
He can run by Roquan, right?
We'll both say for touchdowns. Under.
If old man Jimmy Graham can get by Roquan Smith. Young Buck can.
All right, as far as the running backs go, Philip Lindsay, over under rushing yards, 65.
I'll say over. Whoa. I'll say over. I think he'll have a good game.
I'm going to take the under.
All right.
Does it translate into touchdowns, over under 0.5 for Philip Lindsay?
Under.
I can't.
But we know what our scores are, so we're kind of... dictated
long
by
as
that.
It adds
Damn,
up
I
in
got
the
a lot of unders.
I mean, you have a manual score. I have no touchdowns being scored by the Broncos. So, but winning.
Eddie Goldman injury is makes me pause a little bit.
What, Phil Lindsay?
Man, they're gonna get tired. I don't think Goldman plays. I don't think you understand the life of a center finding out that
it's a good day, huh?
The guy in front of you is injured and may not play.
How great is that?
He's either hurt or he doesn't play at all.
Yeah.
And I love that.
How does that change the life of a center?
It changes it very nicely.
I mean, like, are you dancing? Are you...
No, but you're...
Just happy?
A little lighter on your feet.
Not quite as depressed as you usually are.
Right.
Right.
Because you see the film and you see what he can do to you, and you know that he can't do that to you anymore.
What about his backup?
Who cares?
He's
the backup.
He's not as good.
He's not as good. There's a reason why
he's the backup.
He's the starter.
Right.
Starter.
Would you ever look at how much guys are making to determine how good they are?
No. He didn't have access to that either.
Okay.
There's no cap tracker and things like that back then.
Okay.
There was no internet. Was there? No, there was.
I mean, when did Al Gore invent it?
I think he invented it in the 70s.
Right.
I wonder how much he profits off his invention.
I remember, man, I was in a sociology class in college, and they were trying to explain what email was to us back in, like, 1989. It was, like, mind-blowing, like, what email was.
They need to put a stamp on it? How does it work?
No. Nobody really kind of understood, but every address was .edu, .htt, www.fth. I mean, it was ridiculous. So we could send each other notes. Nobody had a computer. So we were sending emails to nobody. Seriously, we had time in college. Think about this for a second. Teaching us in college what email was. Like, it was a... anyways. Go ahead, what's next?
To close out the running back room, Royce Freeman, where do you see his night at? Over, under for rushing yards, 50 yards.
I'll say over.
Over. No, Eddie. I'll take the over.
So I got about 120 rushing yards for the Broncos. Maybe 130.
You took Phillip with the over?
I did. So I got him over 65 and Royce over 50. So I got 120 rushing yards at least for the Broncos, which I do think they'll be able to do.
Does Royce get the end zone?
This defense is damn active. Have you watched them?
Yes, I have. Well, I watched the Packers game. I mean, that's the only game I watched.
Yeah, but have you watched them on the game pass?
Like yes,
the
yes.
end zone, the,
yes.
the coach's film?
I have.
Roquan Smith, man. That dude can diagnose a play before it even gets off. I'm telling you, the dude is already leaning towards where the play's going.
Do you have total yards then? Let's just, I mean, it's not one of our things, but what total rushing yards for the Broncos? What do you think?
Well, I'm taking Royce over 50 because I think they're going to get tired up front. But I think Phillip is more a pass receiver than rusher in this game. Total yards is... That's a tough one.
I feel like
you don't have it, so we're not going to use it.
I feel like Philip is going to break one
110,
off.
Over under 110?
110 rushing?
You want to do 110? Oh, I got over, I guess, obviously.
You had, 120?
I don't think this defense gives up a breakoff run.
You don't think there's just... Philip just breaks one. Not once, for 30, 35 yards.
One of those fluky plays can skew the whole thing.
Their three levels are legit.
I'd say take the under, then.
I'll take the under.
I'll
take the under on 110 rushing yards.
You got Noah Fant then having a big impact and Emmanuel Sanders. That's your offense, basically.
Right, I think they'll take out Cortland Sutton, however they do it.
All right, next.
You're taking the over on the 110.
Does Royce get in the end zone?
No.
No.
Under. But again, this goes to how many scores that we have.
Right,
by the
Broncos. Your touchdowns are predetermined.
Well, mine are, yeah, so is Tommy's, but I mean, you already got your touchdown, and that's it. We both have a pretty low-scoring game, obviously.
Defensively, over-under for sacks for the Broncos defense, 1.5.
Over!
No more milk carton kids?
No more milk carton kids.
It's hot for our guys, too. man.
Come on, Trubisky was getting hit left and right in the Green Bay game.
That was the first game out, though.
He was getting shelled in the Green Bay game.
Green Bay can get after it, man.
But we can't? We can't.
They had zero in the last game. All Chicago has to do is get the ball out like Derek Carr did.
How are Vaughn and Chubb going to have 40 combined sacks if they don't get two against the Bears?
Got Jacksonville coming. We play Miami? Is Miami on our schedule?
No, they are not, unfortunately.
When we play Tennessee, when they're... Will they, their tackle, Luan, will he be back?
I don't know, but that was one of Adam Rank's one of his two wins he gave us, right? It was Tennessee.
Luan has a four game at least. Not sure how long that goes.
Didn't seem to matter.
I'll take the over. Taking the over.
All right.
Crowd noise.
Over under for interceptions. 0.5.
Over.
I'll take the over.
You get a pick. Come on now. Let's go secondary. Come on, Chris Harris. Come on, Justin Simmons.
All right, last couple here. Red zone touchdowns for the Broncos, over under 1.5.
I'm going to take the under.
Your final score tells me.
I should have thought of the score after, because this isn't very fun.
It predetermines everything.
It determines everything on here.
All right, last one.
Under.
Total points, 35.5, over under.
Well, we're way under, I think. Because this is where we should make our Broncos prediction, by the way. This would be the right time.
Didn't you already have me make it? And you made yours?
We'll do it again. Go ahead. What do you got?
13-10 Broncos.
13-10 Broncos. That's 23 points. That's way under. I have 23 points as well. I've got 12-11 Broncos.
Gosh, that's
brutal. Friggin' Coors Field scores. This is Coors Field scores.
Wade Davis is like coming out in the third quarter for the Broncos. But I have them winning, and you have them winning. All right, what happened then? Why do you have the Broncos winning?
Goldman's injury, we were talking yesterday about how hot it's going to be, and, you know, they have big dudes in the middle of their defense, and I think they eventually get worn down. I think there's going to be some sustained drives out of our offense in the first half that's going to pay dividends at the end. I kind of had it flipped before, like in my mind.
Why aren't they finishing in the red zone then, in your world here?
I don't think they get many opportunities to finish in the red zone.
So they're what for what in the red zone? They were 1-for-4 last time. What are they?
With touchdowns, not field goals.
Yeah, yeah.
1-for-2. I don't see a lot of opportunities.
I'll put them at 0-for-3. So I see three relatively easy field goals for McManimal. And then, like, some sort of freakish bomb to win the game.
Bomb? You have him kicking four field goals.
Yeah, but three from the red zone, like, relatively easy field goals. Like, this just
a bomb,
flat.
A kick.
Yeah, he hits, like, a 61-yarder or something ridiculous. I mean, the weather is perfect for something like that to happen.
Yeah, the hot weather.
Yep.
Kickers love it.
And he just missed that 64-yarder. I mean, I would have him take that kick every day. So we both have Broncos victories. We got W's. Or did you change that on Pick'em?
I did.
This morning
I changed it.
You're officially locked in.
Well, I can change it again tomorrow or today.
You sure can. You can go to Pick'em right at 1043thefan.com. It's KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. Here we are, Tommy. We made it. You're wearing your Bus Lane 68
t-shirt. Did you take the shirt off?
No, I never put it on. I got it. Mine's right here.
Why didn't you put it on?
I don't know. It'll fit.
Well, no. You got to take the other shirt off first.
Well, not in front of
That's
anybody.
What Nick and I did. Nick and I took our shirts off and put these ones on.
Oh, good.
It's like a locker room.
Oh, good. Happy for you guys. Did you dance around together?
No, we did it separate times.
Did you oil yourself up and, you know, make
a
video?
No, we didn't need to.
Really? Didn't need to?
Chris Folly.
Welcome to it. It's the Bears and the Broncos this weekend. Nikki Jabala will join us in 15 minutes to talk about the off-the-field news, which was huge for the Broncos today, is there's another lawsuit being filed, and this may be the... This may be the most aggressive one and might be it. We'll talk about the details with Nikki on it tomorrow. We wish, or rather in 15 minutes. Brittany Bowen's getting married tomorrow. We wish her the best of luck. Years and years of success. It is more than apparent we didn't get invited to the wedding. So that's the way it goes. Here is Coach Fangio talking about Bryce Callahan. What is going on with Bryce Callahan?
Okay. I do see him getting better. We're just going to have to keep seeing some progress, you know, tomorrow and then even Sunday.
So I'm going to guess he's not going. Todd Davis?
I think so. Still don't know if we'll play him this week. Questionable. But he's definitely turned the corner, and he's ready to play.
How you feeling about Todd Davis then, Tommy? What kind of impact could he make?
He's a fire-up guy. He was a captain last year. I know you don't really believe that he was captain-worthy, but...
It was hard to imagine.
Captains come in all shapes and sizes and forms.
As long as you want to look over Derek Wolfe and Chris Harris, it's cool.
Yeah, I'll go with an inside linebacker. It's kind of like the quarterback always has a C.
Okay.
I'll go with inside linebacker. What kind of impact does he make? How conditioned is he? Do they play him in nickel or base or both? He's a starter. They have the mantra of they're starters. They need to play all the plays. It's going to be hot. I'm hoping that they've eased him back in. And he was limited last week, thought he was going to play, said Monday night if it was an emergency, he could have played. They waited a week. It can only be a good thing that he's playing, right?
Of course,
basically, they didn't draft Devin Bush because Todd Davis.
That is correct.
They assumed that he was here and healthy.
That is right. They picked him off.
I'm not saying he's Devin Bush, but they didn't draft Devin Bush because of Todd Davis.
Todd Davis's path has been fascinating, to say the least, as he was on the bottom of the barrel with the Saints. He gets brought in. He becomes a leader. They give him a big contract. They believe in Todd Davis. So my feeling is, he's going to have a pretty big impact. Or, I mean, at least he should, based on how much they believe in him. So I'd be happy to see him come back. You said captains. That's an interesting one. You know, there's captains every week now.
Yeah, Leary, Chris Harris, and Trey Marshall.
Interesting.
What was the question?
Who are the captains this week?
Oh, okay. Trey Marshall.
Special teams. Now, there's quite a few people who are saying to themselves in the car right now, who is Trey Marshall?
I don't remember him making any plays.
I don't remember him making the team.
Isn't he number 36?
No, you got me on that. This rotating captain thing to me, I mean, I kind of get it. But how is Vaughn not a captain every week? How is Joe Flacco not a captain every week?
Maybe you want them to up their game. Make them earn it. Week in, week out.
That's not how it feels like to me.
You think it's just rotating? Everyone gets a chance?
It feels like
it means nothing.
When you go to the company meeting and, Joe Smith wins Employee of the Month. And everybody looks at Joe Smith like, okay, well,
Joe Marshall, 36.
Joe doesn't get paid very much, and I suppose this makes him feel better. If you don't assign the captains to the people who legitimately earn it the most, then the whole concept of being a captain is meaningless, because it just looks like some sort of, oh, it's your turn this week.
So you think that Vic is naming captains each week even though they didn't deserve it?
Who was the best offensive player for the Broncos last week?
Probably Cortland Sutton.
Okay.
Maybe Reisner, Flacco. Who is it this week?
Ron Leary.
It's an interesting pick.
Yeah.
His hold wasn't... I didn't think his hold was really hold-worthy.
You're two captains. You're three captains.
The holding calls are... hold judgment on the holding calls until you get a chance to watch them a couple times. The Bears center, Daniels, gets called for holding on a short yardage play. They declined it. But I swear, the dude that he supposedly held made the tackle. It was third and one. He makes a tackle for a two-yard loss. Dennis is on the ground, and the referee, the umpire, I swear, just decided I'm calling holding. I don't get some of the holding calls. Colton Miller held Bradley Chubb on the touchdown, and that was not called. Garrett Bowles did less for his holding call, and it was called. It's so damn subjective. And sometimes I wonder if the umpire is in an area to call it, because they've moved behind the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. He's back at referee depth. They used to be right with the linebackers. You're in a better position, and for safety reasons they moved him, not for you can call holding better. So Ron Larry's holding call, I didn't think it was a great call.
I'm fine. If you want to say to the team, we believe in Ron Leary, he's the captain. You know, Tom McMahon, the special teams coach, was asking, can kickers be leaders?
Honestly, in my career, every one of them has. You know, I was lucky when I was a young coach. Morton Anderson was our kicker. Then the next year, Jason Elam. You know, and then I go to Adam Vinatieri. So they've always been leaders. So to answer your question, they've always been that. And they lead with their production. And sometimes Brandon has to give his voice, and he does it appropriately.
Yeah. The McManimal is something else. He has been the most, if you're just talking about the most consistent person at doing his job from the beginning of training camp until today, it's been Brandon McManus.
Team MVP.
Well,
he thought he had a chance to lead the team in scoring, or lead the league in scoring.
That's a pretty ineffective offense if that's the case. Or,
no,
or
you're marching,
up,
you're just a bad red zone team.
Okay, great.
Which, you know, could happen.
Yeah,
that's the makings of it.
We can see it.
Is 2-for-4 bad in the red zone? I don't know.
50%?
Is 50% bad, Richie? You said it's failing if you're in school, but if you're playing baseball, that's pretty damn good if you're hitting. So is 50% in the red zone bad in the NFL?
Here's what you'd have to do.
2 out of 4 doesn't sound bad.
You'd
with
have
two
to,
field goals.
You'd have to look up red zone offenses from last year.
That's 20 points right there.
And just see who was what in the red zone last year. So he can effort that and take some time.
Don't work too hard, Richie. Get you in trouble.
I know 2-for-4 or 1-for-4 isn't as good as 3-for-4.
That's brilliant. That's good stuff.
I would.
Do you know what's better than 3-for-4?
4-for-4. Stop.
I didn't need your brother to tell you that.
I don't know, when you played, how often when you got inside the 20 do you feel like you guys should have scored a touchdown?
Most it depends on how you get down there. It could be a fluke play. It could be this grinded out type. When you have a grinded out type of drive to get down there inside the 20, you're thinking you have them on the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just, you know, if you can't run the ball and you hit a, you know, a 60-yard pass, and then you get into the red zone and try to run the ball again, you can't run the ball, your expectations, you have to be realistic about how you got there. If things are clicking, or if you get down there from a long PI, if you're grinding it out and you're getting down there like the Raiders did in that first drive, you could see it coming.
If you had to guess, and Richie's looking it up, so we would be guessing right now.
And it's more difficult.
Go ahead and guess. Okay.
It's more difficult to score down there.
What do you think? So Richie has the answer, but what do you think the best, not the team, but the best red zone percentage was last year?
58.
I'll say 65. And what do you
has
think?
Has Richie got the answer?
Yes, he does. What do you think the bottom red zone percentage was?
What were we?
Well, hold on. Just guess. You said 58. I said 65.
I'll say 38. What did I say? 38 and 58?
Yeah. Wait. 38?
38.
Okay. I'll say.
Do you know the answer already?
No, I do not. I'll say 30. Richie, what's number one?
The best last year was Pittsburgh at 73.47%.
Wow.
Just edging out Kansas City at 73.08%.
Holy smokes.
Okay. And what was the worst?
San Francisco.
Yeah.
41.2%.
Oh. Mm, you're close. Okay.
75, basically 75. So, 3 out of 4 is
extraordinary.
Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's offense was moving the ball like that.
Go to 10. Go to 10. The
I
number
can see
10.
Kansas City. Who's 10th?
Atlanta.
What's that?
64.
Oh, damn.
What?
I guess 2 out of 4 isn't good.
What is the middle? Yeah, like what's 50%?
What's 50%?
50% is really, like, 50% on the dot was the Giants and the Texans, and they were 28th and 29th.
Oh, gosh.
So there you go.
Yeah. That's just touchdowns, right? Not
correct.
Combined?
TD only.
What's 65%? Who had around 65%?
Indianapolis, 67. Cleveland, 66. Okay.
And
Seattle,
what numbers
65.
Were they?
6, 7, 8, 9. Chargers, okay. 64.
All right, so if you want to be a top 10 offense, you've got to be 65%.
So 50 is not even good enough.
No, not even close.
You know what, though?
You're one of the
what's
top,
the worst. Was Deshaun's drop on the same drive as a swinging gate? Is that all the same drive? Because I could have seen the swinging gate working. That was 1st and 6. I think it was a different drive.
I think so, too, but I can look it up.
I could see them going 3 out of 4 on this game.
It's really out of maybe 10. You know, you really want to go 3 for 5. You want to be 3 out of 5. So obviously, you know, if you're the Raiders, you were 3 for 4, you're on pace, right? You can not convert. But 1 for 4 is terrible. Because if you just equate 1 for 4 at the best, you're 3 for 4.
Yeah, but 10. How was the 1 for 4? Was it dysfunctional? Did they not have a chance? Did they not have a clue? Was there no imagination to it? No, the swinging gate was in there. Drop touchdown pass was in there. It's not as bad as the numbers would suggest. And it's week 1. You're on the road.
It was not the same drive, by the way.
I could see you going down there in a drive stalling just because you're calling predictable plays, just penalties getting you out of the red zone, things like that. But just don't go too deep on those numbers. Because outside of like the Chiefs, I'd love to see.
Well, now you know it's good and what's
bad. I'd love
bad.
To see what the 49ers look like and how they got there at 38%. Like, was it a bunch of just.
41.2.
I thought they were 30. Oh, I said 38. Yeah. They were 40%.
Well, they had one of probably the worst scoring offenses in the league last year.
They had backup quarterbacks playing.
Mm-hmm.
They basically were just a tight end.
They hadn't played the Broncos yet. Yeah, their tight end was their leading.
Right. They didn't have much other than that
mm-hmm.
with a backup quarterback.
Killed the Broncos, though. Yeah, the Deshaun Hamilton drop was the next drive. So you had a situation where, you know, the score could have been, if you convert the red zone on the swinging gate, that's 14-7, and then you stop the Raiders 3 and out, and if you could have had Deshaun Hamilton catch a ball in his chest, then it would be 14-14. And it would have been 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter or third quarter. Game could have easily been tied up 14-14 with 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Third quarter, sorry. Tons of time to go. So that's where you just kill yourself.
14-6.
They were losing 14-6, correct. Because the defense had played all right. They had gotten their act together a little bit. It's a bummer, too, because that drive where they did the swinging gate, that's a good long drive. A lot of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 play drive. That's a good drive, man. And they followed up with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 play drive after that. You're doing all right. The game should have been tied. Frustrating. So if the Broncos have any hope to be competitive this year, they've got to be around at least, Tommy, 60% in the red zone. So right now they're 1 for 4. So it's fair to assume if they get 4 red zone possessions, if they want to just have a shot this year, they got to go 3 for 4 in the red zone this week.
Well, they're not going 3 for 4.
Why not?
They're not getting there. You got to watch the damn Bears defense, okay? I'm just telling you. If they go 3 for 4, something magical has happened in week two of the NFL season for the Denver Broncos.
I'll slow down.
How many have them winning 12-11. I have them winning 13-10. Three out of four is 21 points.
No, I know. I understand. How many red zone opportunities do you think they're going to get?
I said two. So they got to go one for two. It's going to be a difficult time for the Broncos to drive down on that defense consistently.
So that'll make them 2 for 6. In red zone?
Let's just go 1 for 2. Why are you going to attack the 1 for 4?
We're going to ignore that game's...
Right, because we've already talked the swinging gate should have been a touchdown. Deshaun's drop should have been a touchdown. So they were 3 for 4 week one, and they're 1 for 2.
We welcome to the show Nikki Javala, our fan Broncos insider, courtesy of Ent Credit Union. Better rates, lower fees, visit Ent.com.
I hope Nikki's not checking my math on that.
Nikki, what is the latest in lawsuit land?
Lawsuit land. Well, earlier today, Beth Bolin Wallace and Amy Clemmer, Pat Bolin's two oldest daughters from his first marriage, they filed a petition in Arapahoe County Court seeking, you know, the invalidation of the trust on the grounds that their father was not of capacity in 2009 when he signed his estate planning documents. They contend that he was deep in the throes of Alzheimer's at that point and was under undue influence when he signed those. So it's a pretty significant filing in the sense that, you know, it really gets to the heart of the issue, you know, from the Bill Bolin lawsuit to, you know, all the stuff with the succession plan and ownership. This really gets to the heart of the issue between Wallace Clemmer and the trustees. It could also have significant implications going forward as far as, you know, arbitration, which is still scheduled with the NFL, and for Wallace and Clemmer. They are running the risk of being disinherited by doing this. There's a no contest clause in the trust, so there's a lot at stake for both sides.
Nikki, why today? And some people, including Adam Schefter, are throwing in the barb that the timing of this seems to be on purpose, being the day before Brittany Bolin's wedding.
Well, they filed the original petition in February, actually. And, you know, I know there's been talk, too, that, you know, did they wait till their father passed before they did this? The original petition was filed in February, and they were seeking relief from 4 claims related to this. But this filing came because the ball was essentially in their court. After the previous filings, the next step for them was to either decide, okay, are they going to challenge the validity of the trust, or are they going to kind of end things here? And they decided to challenge it. It's again risky for both sides, really. But because of the no contest clause, the two sisters they do face possibly being disinherited, which means they would lose their rights as a beneficiary, and it would bypass them and go to their children. So there's quite a bit on the line.
You'd have to assume that the older daughters must feel pretty good about it to put their neck on the line like this.
I would think it's a pretty bold step, and it's a pretty big accusation levied against the trustees to say that, you know, they influenced Pat Bolin into signing those estate documents in 2009. And to be clear, the original trust, and this was signed in an affidavit by Pat's estate attorney at the time, the original trust was formed in 1998. It was restated and amended a handful of times. And in 2009, it was restated again. He signed it. He also signed his will and his power of attorney. So at the heart of this is the timing and his state of mind. You know, Bill Bolin alleged he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2006. He didn't formally step down with the team until the fall of 2013. So it's going to be up to both sides to provide enough evidence to prove that either he was or was not of sound mind in that span of time.
If the older daughters were to win, what year would they go back to as far as the will goes?
I'm not entirely certain. I don't know if it goes back to the original 1998 trust, if it goes back to one of the restated ones. or if it starts anew. I'm not clear on that. That's something I'm still continuing to work on and find out more about. So I'll let you know when I know.
Well, we know that Mary Kelly, Rich Livka, and Joe Ellis are part of the trust now. They are the trust. Who was
the trustees?
Trustees.
They're,
sorry.
Yes.
They're the trustees. Who were the trustees in 1998?
I haven't seen the original trust. They haven't seen the original trust, so I couldn't tell you that offhand. I know there's speculation of who were original trustees. Bill Britton, I know, was close to Pat Bowlen, and I believe he was one of the original. He died a couple years ago, so I don't know that offhand, and I don't want to speculate because that's a pretty prominent issue too.
Well, because I'm sort of just going down the road here. If they were to win the case and it was to go back, wouldn't it go back to whoever the trustees were at that particular time?
Not necessarily, because they're not all living.
Okay,
so,
then what?
You know, when you say that, it doesn't mean that you go back to the whole framework. Perhaps you go back to the language in that trust and what that means for the trustees. We're not entirely sure. I don't even know if that is. You know, that's in fact what would happen if they win, if they just revert back to a previous version of the trust, or if they start anew. I mean, there's still so much that needs to happen in between.
Dan Riley, the lawyer for the trustees, mm-hmm. or is he the lawyer for the trust? Which is
he
it?
Represents the trustees.
He represents the trustees, is married to Mary Kelly, one of the trustees. Is that a conflict of interest?
Depends on which side you're looking at, I suppose. I mean, this is something that Pat Bowlen signed off on. So is it a conflict? Not a big enough one to him. You know, and I don't know the arrangement there with, you know, her separation of role as a trustee and his role as an attorney. So I think it depends on which side you look at it.
What's the next step, Nikki?
The next step is the trustees have to respond. I think they have, you know, somewhere around like 20 days to respond to this petition. So that's the next step on that. And then arbitration is still scheduled for November. So we'll see what happens there. But those are the next two things on the docket.
Let me circle back to one thing real quick. Is there anything they could have done to not file, to not have this come out the day before Brittany's wedding?
Filed it last week, I suppose. I think they were kind of going back and forth on what they wanted to do, what they wanted to say. So, you know, they had kind of a 2-week span there. I don't want to speak for them. I don't know if the intent was to file it on the day before Brittany's wedding. I don't think it was, because this is something they had been discussing, and the opposition knew this was the next step, meaning they knew they had to respond in some way. And this is when they responded.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
It's above my pay grade, this entire process.
All right, Nikki.
Mine too.
You got a pick for the game Sunday?
Oh, Broncos fans are not going to like me. The Bears with that defense. I have to. I think it'll be close, but I'm going with the Bears.
Okay.
Sorry.
The Broncos last week, so maybe
bad luck.
Balancing it. Yeah.
You got a score. You got a score. We got 13-10 and 12-11.
Wow, that's kind of around where I was thinking.
What do you say? Put a number on it.
Oh, this is. I was gonna go 9-7.
9-7.
Oh wow.
Sorry, right. Not to be a total pessimist,
it sounds about right.
Actually, you have a touchdown for the Broncos. That's more optimistic than
me.
So there you go. All right, Nikki, thanks. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good one, guys.
It's Nikki Jabala, courtesy of Ent Credit Union. Tale of the tape, Broncos defense going against the Bears offense. Tale of the tape with Tom Nalen next.